This is Wendy Bauer returning with the November 16th, 2015 Decatur Herald and Review. We continue now with the obituaries. Death notices listed for November 16th in Macon County. Kathleen R. Bufford, Decatur. Thomas Michael Cantwell Sr., Decatur. Donald D. Dodson, Decatur. Forrest M. Hines, Jr., Decatur. Etta Kirby, Decatur. Richard Perlmutter, Decatur. Brenda Sue Wilson, Argenta. And Betty Jean Wrigley, of Decatur. Other deaths reported in Central Illinois include Wayne A. Johnston, of Neoga. Hilda J. Lee, of Waynesville. Charles A. Reardon of Arcola, and Nyla Jean Reed of Effingham. And from the obituaries, Thomas Michael Cantwell, Jr., Decatur. Thomas Michael Cantwell, Jr., 65, retired district manager for Prudential Insurance, died Wednesday, November 11, 2015, in St. Mary's Hospital. Services will be at 10 a.m. Monday in Holy Family Catholic Church. Visitation was Sunday. Burial will be in Mount Gilead Cemetery. Forrest M. Hines, Jr. from Decatur. Forrest M. Sonny Hines, Jr., 85, of Decatur, passed away at 8 o'clock p.m. Saturday, November 14, 2015, in his home. A graveside service to celebrate Sonny's life will be held at 1 o'clock p.m. Tuesday, November 17, 2015, in Point Pleasant Cemetery, with military honors provided by the Macon County Honor Guard and the U.S. Army Honors Team. And the list of funerals today, November 16th, include Kathleen R. Bufford, 82, of Decatur, 10 o'clock a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Thomas Michael Cantwell, Sr., 65, of Decatur, 10 a.m. in Holy Family Catholic Church. Donald D. Dodson, 80, of Decatur, 9 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Richard Perlmutter, 68, of Decatur, at 1 p.m. in Fairlawn Cemetery. Charles A. Reardon, 93, of Arcola, at 10 a.m. in Arcola United Methodist Church. Betty Jean Wrigley, 87, of Decatur, at 2 p.m. in St. James Catholic Church. And from Prairie Talk, Gary Geisler, Trump coming to Decatur. I had a little dream the other night, so Donald Trump is relocating to Decatur, Illinois. It's gonna be great. I'll tell you this, we're gonna make Decatur great again. Yeah, but Decatur is a pretty good place to live now, Donald. How are you gonna make Decatur great again? Well, I'll tell you where I will start. First thing, we are gonna bring back the Bears to Decatur. The Bears are coming back and they are gonna play at Piggott Field over on Jasper Street. It's gonna be great. But Donald, the Bears are in Chicago, and besides, Piggott Field won't hold 50,000 people. I'm going to stretch Piggott Field all the way to downtown. It's going to be great. Okay, Donald, but the Bears only have a handful of games a year. What about some industry for our town? Oh, that is a key part of my plan. We're going to make Decatur the new launching pad for America. All spaceships and satellites will be launched from Decatur. We'll build a world-class launch pad just south of town. Astronauts hanging out in town. It's going to be great. Yes, but we're not close to an ocean, and isn't it dangerous to surrounding towns to be launching rockets and jettisoning first-stage rocket engines? Oh, we are going to cover Danville with a giant trampoline, and no rockets will actually land on the city. It's going to be great. Well, Donald, there are some things here in Decatur that you would keep. Oh, yes, Decatur is full of wonderful people. I love the people in Decatur. I want the people in Decatur to stay. Wonderful people. Well, we agree about that, Donald. Say, Donald, is there anything else that you would bring back to Decatur? Absolutely. There is one iconic place that is missing, and everyone in Decatur wants it back. It's Elam's Drive-In on El Dorado. Car hops, cold root beer, pork tenderloin sandwiches. It's going to come back, bigger and better, but right here on El Dorado by the train tracks. Now you're talking, Donald. When can you start? From the Government and Politics page of the November 15th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, Allison Petty brings the article, Decatur Library Annex Full of Mold, Plans on Hold. The Decatur Public Library's annex building has undoubtedly seen better days. Built in 1968 as the Automotive Center for Sears and transformed into the Village Mall in 1999, the 24,000-square-foot facility now houses only library maintenance and landscaping equipment. That could change soon, as the empty building could play a key role in discussions of the library's future. Under a plan announced last year, Macon County offices would move into that space, and the library's second floor with both the library building and annex owned by the Decatur Public Building Commission. That plan appeared to fizzle after Decatur City Council members objected earlier this year. Now the council is in talks to acquire the library, and with it, decisions about how to address the annex building and the serious damage caused by its neglected roof. Leaking is almost not a strong enough word. Is there a better word? Is there a more forceful word than leaking? City librarian Rick Meyer wondered recently after giving a tour to a Herald and Review reporter and photographer. After a day without rain, puddles lingered on the bottom floor of the building, water having permeated the roof and the second floor. Upstairs, patches of soggy carpet squished underneath the feet of visitors. Dark mold crawled up the walls and ceiling. The building has no running water, but dripping noises echoed through the silent hallway, evidence of continued leaking. It also has no heating or cooling, and the first floor has essentially been gutted. The damage was already done when Meyer took the job in 2014. By then, the building had been unoccupied for several years, becoming a shell of its former self. The Village Mall opened in 1999 with a slew of retail and business offerings. Some of those included Village Bagels and Deli, Apple Peddler, Olive's Garden of Angels, Artistic Cosmetics, Simply Shades, and Carlson Wagonlit Travel. Developer John Cardwell leased the building from the library and managed it until 2006, when the obligation was assigned to Decatur Hospitality Services, LLC, owned by James R. Randall. The following year, former city librarian Lee Ann Fisher said legal issues with the management of the annex led the library to reclaim control. Tenants said the library board subsequently asked them to leave, with most businesses having vacated by early 2008. Fisher announced plans to turn the annex into a cultural center and local history room, a project that was first announced in 2006 and initially planned for vacant space on the library's second floor. In 2007, the library reserved that space for the Decatur School District to house a gifted services program center, a development that never materialized. Library workers cleared the first floor of the annex to prepare for remodeling. But by the time the last tenant, Glenda Williamson Realty, left in January 2010, plans for the annex were put on hold. The library was facing budget cuts and there was no money to fix the roof. "We can't just pull it out of our hat right now," Fisher told the Herald and Review at the time. The passing of several years did not help. Damage has progressed to the point that Meyer said a contractor refused to patch the roof a year and a half ago. He said, "I'd just be taking your money and accomplishing nothing. The roof needs to be replaced," Meyer said. That contractor's estimate for a new roof was $97,000. The Decatur Public Building Commission had agreed to take ownership of the library facility earlier this year. Commission manager Jerry Lord said its estimate for the annex renovation was $2,748,441. Renovation of the space in the library was expected to cost $2,825,000. The City Council is slated to meet in closed session Monday to discuss terms of acquiring the library, a desire Mayor Julie Moore Wolfe expressed to the Library Board in a letter last month. If the deal does go through, City Manager Tim Gleason said the annex building would be a priority. One of three options would occur immediately. The city would replace the roof, try to sell the building, or demolish it altogether. As for the obvious mold issues, Gleason said he was unsure what degree of remediation would be required. But the bones are there, he said, and one way or another, something has to be done. And Teresa Churchill brings an article in the Crime and Courts section. Innocence Project founder brings case to Decatur. Angel Gonzalez, 41, released from Dixon Correctional Center in March, is the eighth person the Illinois Innocence Project has helped free over the past 12 years. Five of these success stories have happened since 2011, the year the project began receiving federal funding to hire its own legal staff. Founding director Larry Golden said he looks for the faster pace to continue and counts efforts on behalf of the three people convicted of killing Karen Hearn Slover among the project's current cases. The most common factors leading to wrongful convictions, Golden said, they include eyewitness misidentification, false confession, bad science, and law enforcement or state's attorney's misconduct. The American criminal justice system is broken, Golden said in a telephone interview from his home in Springfield. We're not only working to get people out of prison who are innocent, but generate reforms to the system to prevent wrongful conviction. Golden, an emeritus professor of political and legal studies at the University of Illinois at Springfield, will be the featured speaker in Decatur this week during a meeting of the Macon County Criminal Justice Group, formerly known as Macon County Citizens Opposing Capital Punishment. Angel Gonzalez is to be with him. Sister Joanne Shellian, a member of the group, said she and others have long been impressed with the project's work and wanted to give the public a chance to learn about it, too. Most recently, the Innocence Project received a $753,958 grant from the U.S. Department of Justice to spend more time exonerating Latino inmates such as Gonzalez, who spent more than 20 years in prison for a rape he did not commit. After the victim misidentified Gonzalez as her assailant from her seat inside a squad car, he signed a confession written in English, a language he did not understand. He was proven innocent by DNA testing. Golden said citizens groups like the Macon County Criminal Justice Group are vital to efforts to examine the way we are trying and convicting people. He said imprisonment of Michael Slover Sr., Jeanette Slover, and their son, Michael Slover Jr., in the 1996 death of Karen Hearn Slover was the culmination of a tragic case in which the Decatur area community became upset and pushed for a conviction. The evidence was highly circumstantial, Golden said. It was so tenuous, in my judgment, the case should never have been brought to trial. He stressed, however, that members of the Illinois Innocence Project do not see their role as standing outside the criminal justice system and taking potshots. Our goal is to work toward a system that gets it right, Golden said. And the sidebar notes that if you go, what it is, Larry Golden, founding director of Illinois Innocence Project, when, at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, November 18th, where, First Presbyterian Church, 204 West Prairie Avenue, and the sponsor is the Macon County Criminal Justice Group. And local news from November 15th, crimes against elderly on the rise. Seminar tackles growing problem of crime against the elderly. From Decatur by Huey Freeman. 20 years ago, Paul Greenwood didn't know much about crimes against the elderly. I was assigned this task to prosecute crimes I didn't know existed, said Greenwood, head of Elder Abuse Prosecution Unit for the San Diego County District Attorney's Office in California. This is the fastest growing crime in this country and the most under-investigated and under-prosecuted crime. Greenwood, who calls his recently widowed mother in southern England on the phone every day, is considered one of the world's foremost experts on crimes against seniors. After members of his staff heard Greenwood speak, Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott invited him to Decatur to educate local law enforcement personnel and those who work with the elderly. It is the top priority of the Elder Victims Crime Unit to keep seniors from becoming victims, Scott said. Greenwood, a prosecutor since 1993 who has testified several times before the U.S. Senate Committee on Aging, said we can expect an avalanche of cases involving victimization of our oldest residents. He plans to speak on many facets of crime prevention, investigation, and prosecution during the day-long session scheduled for Friday, November 20th at Richland College. The fastest-growing segment of the population is 85 and older, Greenwood said. Because of medical advances, more and more are living to 95 or 100, but many don't have the mental capacity to withstand being victims of crime, he said during a phone interview. The combination of much of the nation's wealth in the hands of the elderly, with a large number of people caring for them, provides opportunities for victimization. There are also numerous stranger scam operations. There's a greater awareness now of these crimes and a willingness to report them, Greenwood said. Like domestic violence cases years ago, elder abuse is often looked upon as strictly a family matter. For example, a mother might not want to prosecute a son. My message is we must not allow victims to tell us what cases to prosecute, he said. We have to use the same methods in elder abuse as we do in domestic violence. The fastest growing form of elder abuse is financial exploitation. There are so many ways of stealing that aren't the norm, Greenwood said. If we look deep enough, we can show that the taking was a result of taking advantage of cognitive disabilities. In the sidebar, if you go, what it is, Crimes Against the Elderly, a seminar on prevention, investigation, and prosecution, recommended for law enforcement, caregivers, bankers, healthcare, and social workers. When? 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, November 20th. Registration is at 8 o'clock a.m. Where? Richland Community College, Schilling Salons 1 or 2. Pre-register by sending an email to lshelton@sa-macon-il.us. For more information, call 217-424-1400. The cost is free. And an article by Teresa Churchill from Decatur. Inside the Box: Homelessness Experienced Up Close, Personal. Fighting a cold, Kaylee Smith found that thinking about her Decatur apartment was about all that got her through a frigid night outside. I have a bed that I can go home to and sleep, she said. Smith, 21, a native of Macon and a senior human services major at Millikan University, was among about 50 people who participated in Decatur's annual Box City on Friday night and Saturday morning to kick off National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week today. The event unfolded on Millikan's Miller Quad, where soup and sandwiches were served by the Good Samaritan Inn, a makeshift village sprang up on the nearby grass, and its inhabitants hunkered down for the night. The next day, survivors left nothing behind but footprints in the frost before making their way along West Main Street toward the rising sun and breakfast with men staying at the Salvation Army's shelter because they are homeless. We have a story to tell when we get back to school, said Nathan Outlaw, 14, a member of Decatur's First United Methodist Church. How bad it is to be outside all day and all night. That's the point made by organizers of Box City, members of the Macon County Homeless Council Continuum of Care. Darsanya Switzer, chairwoman of the council's advisory committee and program director for Homeward Bound, told participants Friday they needed to take the experience they were about to have and multiply it. Tonight will be fun for you, but think about the people in this community who have to do this every single night, Switzer said. Residents of this year's Box City included youth from New Vision Church of God, as well as students from Millikan University, but a few awoke Saturday to discover their roommates had abandoned their cardboard shelters either to sleep by one of the burn barrels provided by D&O Properties or go home altogether. Jashara Clark, a sophomore human services major from Lombard, was one such individual who started out the night in a cardboard structure large enough for her and seven other Millikan students, but woke up to find she and Bemajareki Williams Jr., a junior communications major from Decatur, were the only ones left. "My feet feel like ice," Clark said. Temperatures that dipped below freezing were not the only cold, hard facts participants were forced to confront. Friday night, Denise Jones, a homeless case manager for Homeward Bound, introduced them to Dove, Inc. clients who were previously homeless, a man because of identity theft and a woman because of domestic violence. On Saturday, they met Stephen Taylor, 49, and Josh Benton, 43, who, like the other Salvation Army shelter residents in attendance, held up cardboard signs for visitors to see when they first came into the Army's community center. Benton's sign read, "I am alone," and he expressed appreciation for Israel Caballero, children's pastor at New Vision Church of God, who made a point of telling him that he is not alone. "I pushed everybody away that tried to help me," Benton said. "Stay away from drugs and alcohol because they will bring you down." Mary Garrison, associate professor of social work at Millikan, got participants to think more deeply about what they'd experienced sleeping outside. Jared Boland, men's minister at New Vision, also reminded them how much they had been given to get through the night. "When you think about what we were provided that normally you would have to find before trying to get some sleep and stay warm, you can see why homeless people get so exhausted," Boland said. "It takes everything they have just to survive." Caballero, who brought along his 9-year-old son Jeremiah, said he felt motivated to keep the burn barrels supplied with wood. "The fact that everyone was tossing and turning was one thing, but the cold was a brutal thing," he said. Waylon Stevens, a junior marketing major at Millikan from Defiance, Arizona, said an important lesson for him was that anyone can become homeless. "It can be a series of unfortunate events, or just one," Stevens said. "It was eye-opening." And the sidebar indicates, if you go, what it is, the National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week activities. Today, which was Sunday the 15th at 3 p.m., was the Allegiance concert. But throughout, on Thursday at 7 p.m., screening of the Homestretch at the Avon Theater, 426 North Water Street, with discussion to follow. And throughout November, Someone's Family Photography Exhibit by Pamela Hauser, Millikan University's Blue Connection, 117 North Water Street. And from Mount Zion, by Chris Luzvardi, staff writer, Craft Show Becomes Holiday Tradition in Mount Zion. Mike Little has found the trip from Chicago back to Decatur area worthwhile to be one of the vendors at spring and Christmas craft shows in Mount Zion. Little was displaying part of his collection of specialty photographs Saturday during the Mount Zion Christmas Craft Show at the Mount Zion Convention Center. He has come to enjoy the shows in Mount Zion rather than going other places closer to where he now lives. "This is my favorite," Little said. "I've made good connections by doing the shows here." Space for the show, with more than 70 vendors from all over the state, was full in June, when a waiting list was started, said Bonnie Rideout, one of the event's coordinators. She said that's the earliest it has ever sold out. "Every year the waiting list gets longer," Rideout said. A preview Friday evening was well attended and has proven a popular time to come for those who might not make it the next day or want an early start to see what's available, Rideout said. It has become a holiday tradition for some. The mix of items available range From jewelry, photographs, and baskets to tasty treats, such as Dell's Popcorn Shop items, along with biscuits and gravy, chicken and noodles, and cinnamon rolls from the kitchen of Doris Yoder. Little hopes his photographs stand out with a unique perspective from wherever he goes. He grew up in Latham and has found plenty to photograph in Decatur and surrounding small towns that can be turned into postcards. One of his photographs was of the Latham Water Tower, while others showed places in Decatur such as the Lincoln Square Theater, Creakles, and Sandy's Motel. "Nobody sells Latham postcards," Little said. "Decatur has so much history." Pam Martin of Decatur tries to create jewelry that is unique and appreciates it when others share her sense of humor, like when a young boy was laughing at how silly it seemed to see a nose on a ring. Martin enjoys working with polymer clay. Even though Martin tries to vary what she does, some of her items have become part of collections. "I tried to retire the penguins," Martin said. "I didn't realize so many people collect them." Designer Susie Morrow of Home Sweet Home Designs in Decatur finds the Mount Zion Show comes at a great time to kick off the holiday shopping season. She was selling glass fusion jewelry and stained glass panels, along with helping her friend, Barb Davis, who sells snowmen decorated with various themes, including sports teams. "This is always a good show," Morrow said. "Everyone seems ready to start the holiday season." Rideout started coordinating the events while also being a vendor selling baskets. Vendors were already reserving their spots for the Mount Zion Spring Craft Show, which Rideout said is scheduled for March 5th and 6th. Another new event is the Junk in Your Trunk Flea Markets at the Mount Zion Convention Center, Rideout said. "We're trying it to see how it goes," she said. "We're hoping it's as popular as this show. The craft shows have been quite successful." The first Junk in Your Trunk event is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, November 21st, with a $1 admission and free for children 10 and under. Other dates for the flea markets include January 16th, January 30th, and March 26th. More information is available at www.mtzionconventioncenter.com or by calling 217-864-5424. And this has been Wendy Bauer reading to you from the Decatur Herald and Review, November 15th and November 16th, 2015. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.